Hey, so welcome back to Witches DNA 101. My house, my entire house smells like roses because I did my usual house cleansing that I do once a week or more if needed, but mainly just once a week. And I cleanse with salt or incense. I use dragon's blood or owl sage to cleanse. Salt or dragon's blood or sage. Or lavender or cedar. Or Palo Santo. And then I protect. So tonight I cleansed with salt all my windows, sills, and doorways and entrances into rooms and corners because negative energy likes to collect in corners. And I then went and I burned some Nag Champa incense. To protect. So, you want to cleanse, protect, and then bless. That's the order you want to go. Cleanse, protect, and bless. And so I use Nag Champa incense. Okay, so when I cleansed with the salt, I worked widdershins, which is counterclockwise or backwards to remove. And then when I protected, I wanted to bring in protection, spiritual protection. So I worked dorsal or clockwise. And I put Nag Champa incense everywhere. I have been using patchouli. You can use sage or dragon's blood or Palo Santo or cedar or lavender. So many things you can use, even sound, clapping your hand firmly and loudly to break up the negative energy, or ringing chimes to break up negative energy, because that negative energy doesn't like loud noise. It just breaks it up, dispels, it breaks up the vibrations, scatters it a bit. And then I work dorsal to bless, and that's why my house smells like roses. There's rose incense everywhere, so that's beautiful. You can also do flowers, plant flowers, make love, or have great friends over, cook food, do things that make you happy, that lift your vibrations. You can also do that in protecting your house also, because those things that lift your vibrations also brings in protective energies as well. So, you guys know I'm coming from a point of being raised among witches, and then coming of age under the training of a real true shaman who was trained under for more than 20 years under a real true shaman. Okay, so I wanted to talk to you guys about I'm going to talk a little bit about druidry. You guys heard me mention this in earlier podcasts, and this is what I suspect my grandmother's heritage is, but I'm not 100% certain. She did reverence trees. Trees were an amazing, important part of her life. We did have an oak tree, a big, huge, I think it was an oak tree. We had a walnut tree. We had a mulberry tree. I wouldn't say bush. This thing was big, tall, hovered over us. Two trees in the back. I forget what kinds those were. Her favorite was we had two willow trees in the yard. Imagine that. You know that willow trees are customarily used magically to make wands, magic wands. Okay, so I do readings for a group, and it's called The Psychic Hideaway, and it's on Facebook. It's an amazing group. The creator is Lucy Baker. She's an awesome demonologist, and she's just a great psychic medium. Awesome. And also Claire Sage. She is an awesomely gifted person as well. And there's so many of us on there. Well, today someone had posted a picture of her grandmother, and as a a little psychic challenge, asked if we could come up with her occupation. Well, everybody was coming up with occupations, but I did not. My readings are always different from everybody else's, so this did not surprise me. So my grandmother came through, and she was so excited about this lady's grandmother. And I, instead of the occupation as far as what she did to make a living, I got everything else, the psychic medium, everything else, and that she was Irish. My grandmother was Irish. She's Irish. She's Irish. She's Irish. Because my grandmother, you guys know, is Irish and Scandinavian on her dad's side. And so, that's what I wrote down. Everything that I was getting from my grandmother is what I was writing. It wasn't like a psychic thing apart from her, because she was feeding me this information. And the lady came back and confirmed everything, and that her grandmother was from Cork, which is in Ireland, Cork, Ireland. So that was interesting. So I met a new sister, and we're trying to figure out if maybe my grandmother and her grandmother are related. Interesting, huh? So moving on, let's talk about Druidry. Druidry began about 2,200 years ago, and it was like a priestly thing. It was very religious. They were very highly educated, highly revered. They were priests. They were judges. They were counselors, and they did a lot of things. They were teachers, and they were Celtic, and also known to be among the British Isles and Gaul, which is now modern France. So Julius Caesar pops up in this story quite a few times. So there were two groups that he held in really high honor. Those were the noblemen and the druids. And I had to do some research on this, so I got a lot of my information from Life Science, Britannica, and druidry.org, who got their information. They excerpted their information from What Do Druids Believe by Philip Carr Gomm, that's Gomm, Granta, 2006. Okay, now that I've got that. So they didn't do, okay, so the Christian movement eventually came along, right? It, of course, it eventually came along, and they wanted to wipe out everything. They was antagonistic to everybody who was not believing what they believe. That's shocking. And so they made up stories to scare people about the Druids, saying that they did human sacrifices and all this other craziness. Well, they do not. Druids were peace loving. They were judges. They did do animal sacrifices, but they did not do human sacrifices. Now, in the Bible, Abraham did human sacrifices because he was about to sacrifice his son until God told him not to and put a ram in a bush and so he could sacrifice the lamb for a sacrament instead of the son, instead of his son. And Abraham was just upset because he didn't want to sacrifice his son, not because he had to sacrifice a human. Okay, so the priest had like it wasn't like everybody equal. There was like one priest, and then when that priest died, they would choose another priest, highly honored person, to become the next priest. And if there was more than one highly honored person, then of course they would have their little duel, their little fight to find out who was going to be the next. So they are, because they're peace loving, they stayed away from warfare, and because of that, they were exempt from the taxes that went into paying for the war and all that stuff. So because of this, they were saved from war. Meant that a lot of people were trying to get into being a Druid, and a lot of people's families was pushing them to become Druid. And why not? I mean, they study philosophy, for crying out loud, and astronomy and the lore of the gods. They were highly intelligent, and they spent as much as 20 years in their studies. Now that number is important because my mentor, who was a shaman, trained for 20 years, over 20 years, and her mentor, a shaman, trained for over 20 years. You said that the druids were amongst the shamans were amongst the druids, or there is a connection there. Okay, so what the Druids believed as far as the soul was concerned is that it's immortal. They believed in reincarnation. They believed that for a certain amount of time, a soul would live after death, would live in another person. There was a group. Not the Druids, but a group that practiced at the same time as the Druids that are said, rumored to be the ones doing human sacrifices in wicker baskets. But I'm thinking that is just another story made up by Christians back then. Could be true, but I'm thinking that it's made up by Christians back then because they wanted everybody to convert and they had to make the Druids and the other pagans look ugly in order to do that. Okay, so Caesar, and I said that Julius Caesar pops up a lot in this story. His accounts pop up a lot to validate and verify a lot of what people are speculating. So, from his accounts, the chief authority is received from the philosopher Poseidonis. Now, the chief authority, what I mean by that is the one who's handing down the decrees, the judgments. Poseidonis, whose accounts verify with Irish sagas. Irish sagas are Irish folklores or folk tales or myths. Caesar's descriptions of the annual assembly of the Druids and their election of an arch-druid is also confirmed by Irish Saga. Now, they came up with the arch before the Christians did because they were around before the Christian movement was around. Remember that because we're going to be coming back to that a little bit later. So, Druids revere trees and forest clearings and caves because caves were symbolic to the womb and signified or symbolized rebirth. Okay, so Druidic rites were performed in clearings and forests, sacred buildings, only later under Roman rule. Okay, so, all right, so in under Tiberius, and he reigned from 14 to 37 Common Era, or CE, the Druids were suppressed in Gaul, or modern-day France, in Rome. In Ireland, they lost their priesthood to Christianity. And survived as poets, historians, and judges. Okay, so makes me think of St. Patrick. They lost their priesthood to Christianity. I don't know why St. Patrick just popped up in my mind. Maybe he was Druid previously. So a lot is unknown about Druidry, and it's so mysterious because it was an oral thing. They didn't believe in writing anything down. Everything was spoken, everything was oral, and this was validated through Julius Caesar. And now one other person I can't think of right now. So, there's some comparisons going on. The Hindu Brahmin and the Celtic Druids were lateral survivors of an ancient Indo-European priesthood. Also, where did I write that down at? Nope, not there. Well, I'll come back to it. Okay, so any art historians out there? If so, I'm going to say a name. You're going to be like, I love that guy. Or, I learned about that guy. Pliny the Elder. From 2,000 years ago. There was a ritual, a fertility ritual that involved animal sacrifice that they would do. It involved what? It involved the mistletoe. And the same thing that Christians do around, or people do, not just Christians, but people do around Christmas or Advent. And they hang a mistletoe in. Whoever's underneath the mistletoe have to kiss or whatever. Yeah, so they would do that on the fifth day of the moon, because the fifth day of the moon started their months. So they gathered in rites. And they would take two white bulls, and everything is white. Okay, so they would take two white bulls, and a priest would climb a tree. Now, I don't know how old these priests are, okay, but from my research, the priest would climb a tree. And I'm trying to picture an old, really old guy climbing a tree. I mean, it's possible they were probably really fit because they were fed really well, because they were so well respected. And so the priest would climb the tree, cut down a mistletoe with a golden sickle. How cool is that? And everyone in white robes would receive the mistletoe in a white covering or cloak, a covering. The animal would be sacrificed and prayers said for fertility, you know, because all the they did that for the barren animals, and then they would drink a tincture, and that with a mistletoe tincture, and that or they would and that would be part of the rite, and the tincture would also be. Could be used for an antidote for poisonings, white poisonings, because mistletoe is poisonous. Anyway, so Druidism flourished in the British Isles and in Gaul as well. So, as well as Gaul, modern day France, as well as Ireland. So, Druidism is Celt, it's Celtish. Okay, Irish, and ask me, throw in Scandinavian in there also. And but it is found as far east as modern day Turkey. Get that. There were Celt mercenaries in Egypt during Cleopatra the Seventh's reign and in Judea. How does that sounds familiar for you, people who've cracked open a Bible before, or religious scholars, or those attending religious schools? Judea is written, is mentioned a lot in the Bible. And that was 2200 plus years ago. So, I spoke about a little earlier in this podcast about how the Druids loved caves and how the cave symbolizes the womb and the womb and rebirth. Well, back art historians, here we go again. The Lascaux Caves, and I might not be pronouncing Lascaux right. It might be Lascaux, Lascaux, whatever, but. It's highly suspect that they were possible druid cave. That was a possible druid cave, and that it was a popular druid meeting place because they resembled the room in Rebirth. So that's interesting. And in Wales, 26,000 years ago, humans were found preserved in red cloth, which may have been rubbed with red ochre. You guys know, art historians, red ochre was used a lot back then. Even in like inscriptions and stuff like that. And were found buried with ivory rods. They're thinking, they're suspecting that those ivory rods were the first magic wands. How about that? Okay, so migrations happen. There's migrations all the time. But migrations happened from the Caucasus and India, bringing with it animistic and shamanistic cultures. So medieval Irish lore does not recount druids as sacrificers. Irish druids are the wisest and most learned of their time, to quote. Advisors to local political leaders, wizards, and magicians. So Irish and classical authors note Druidry lasted from 400 BCE before Common Era to 600 CE Common Era. That's about 1,000 years. And I quote. By 6th century, all of Europe mostly were Christian and they were antagonistic. Okay, I already told you guys about that. But this is extremely interesting, and most of you guys already know. I already knew, but I'm going to mention it for those who are not been enlightened to this fact. And I just say fact because it is a fact. Christianity stole from paganism. So they came through, Christians came through and ransacked all the pagan symbols and altars and all that mess, and erected their own churches on top of it and took the symbols with them. The Eucharist. If you're sensitive to this, I would not continue listening to this podcast. Or just take a break from it, maybe, or just fast forward back past this part, okay? The Eucharist. Bread and wine was also the ritual feast of the Eleusinian mysteries. Not quite sure what that is, but we do know that the Eucharist is taken from the pagans or from witchcraft. Witchcraft has always been around. It's older than the druids. Witchcraft is not Wiccan. Let me repeat that. Witchcraft is not Wiccan. But Wicca is witchcraft. I'm going to repeat that one more time. Witchcraft is not Wiccan. But Wicca is witchcraft. Okay. Moving on. So the papal bulls, if you read the scripts, they changed the celebrations of Christ's birth to springtime to coincide with celebrations linked to the winter solstice. Now, this is not saying that Christ was not born, not saying that at all. They just moved his birthday. So, Christian saints like Saint Bridget and Saint Dionysius are from, and I might have torn that name up, sorry, art historians and history buffs, period, are from histories of pagan gods and goddesses. Y'all can look that up. Churches were built on top of shrines to gods and in sacred groves. Now, whose territory is sacred groves? The Druids. This shows the Druidry, instead of being wiped out, were actually meshed in with Christianity. But you know what? They were already priests, so why not? They were priests, judges, teachers, counselors. So why not, right? And they were being wiped out, so instead of going away, they could still have their teachings and stuff, but they would just be merged with. And who knows, there might have been a Druid somewhere when Christ was born. The existence of Druidry in the cross, in the church, does not negate the birth of Christ. Okay? The two can reside together. Let me repeat that, for especially for you guys who are sensitive, because there are Christian witches out there. The presence, possible presence of Druids at Christ's birth or in the church does not negate Christ's birth at all. Nobody's even saying that. Well, I'm not. Okay, so moving on. Christian clerics have transcribed parts of a tradition that until their arrival was only oral records. We went through all that. Yada, yada, yada. So there's this thing called the Records of the Ancient Laws of Ireland. Those are highly, highly suspected to be Druid. See, there's a lot of Druid stuff coming from Ireland, so I'm thinking they mainly Irish, but they carried it to the British Isles and Gaul, or modern-day France. Because they were judges. Oh, let me see, go back. Ancient laws of Ireland, possibly Druidic because they were ancient laws of Ireland. Because they were Druidic, because the Druids were judges. And the Irish mythology and stories or sagas of Ireland and Wales, which modern Druids say, and that's the Druid movement that we got going on now, thanks to Stonehenge. That's another discussion part. They say, contain much of ancient Druid teachings and wisdom. So it's the Druid revival that Stonehenge started. 17th century Stonehenge, the Druid revival. Interesting. So there's like a 900 year gap between the occurrence of Druidry, of Druidism, of the Druid religion, and Stonehenge. Stonehenge arriving first. But it's known, I'm going to go ahead and say known, that Druidry existed long before it was, people are saying that it first came, so the Druids could have been around when Stonehenge was being built and may have even used it a few times. So Freemasonry have strong, and I've known this a lot, and I have some Freemasons in my family. They're all males, have strong Druidic leanings, springing from the Druid revival. Ancient and archaeological order of Druids had a member named Winston Churchill. Winston Churchill is a Druid? What? 1940s and the 1950s, the ancient Druid order had two important figures that went in two important directions. And you Wiccans are going to be excited about this part. Especially Gerald Gardner and Ross Nichols. So yes, they came from the Druid order. Gardner, or shall I say his full name, Gerald Gardner, created Wicca, and I do believe he created the Gardnerian path as well. With the Gardnerian path has it strongly resembles or strongly takes on the characteristics or the personality, or the character of Druids. It echoes the Druid order more, way more deeper than Wicca. Even though Gardnerian path is part of Wicca, Gardnerian path is separate from Wicca because the Gardnerian path has sacrifices, not human people, and I don't believe animal, but it's their sacrifices are extremely secretive. It's an extremely secretive religion. Freemasonry is extremely secretive. And this is in the 1940s and 50s when these were created. He didn't create witchcraft, though, because as I explained earlier, witchcraft has always been around. When Wicca came along, Wicca just gave it a name. Okay? Wicca gave paganism a name. Because before, pagans were just a very general term. But witchcraft is a name that gave the pagans that practice witchcraft a name. So, Nichols stuck all the way to Druidry and created the Eightfold Paths or Sabbats. So the Sabbats are Druid. They're not Wiccan people. The Sabbats are Druid. They are not Wiccan. I'm going to repeat that one more time. The Sabbats are Druid. They are not Wiccan. And the Druid is a non-Wiccan. Druidry is not Wiccan. Wicca came around less than 100 years ago. Druidry's been around for thousands of years. But Wicca is also a general term that helps categorize a witchcraft that has been around for thousands of years. Not Druidry, just basic in general. So that was a very deep and informative lesson on Druidry, the ancient religion, ancient witchcraft. So, let's talk about Christian witches. I'm going to talk about Christian witches for a little bit, and I might continue the next podcast. I'm not sure though, but I might, depending on how far I get in this one. Christian witches are amazing. They get a lot of flack, especially from Wiccans who have many hundreds of different gods that they serve. That they recognize. Please excuse me for saying serve. That they recognize. Christian witches have the Father, Son, Holy Ghost that they recognize. Jesus as being brother. And that makes sense because Jesus is God's son. We're God's children, so Jesus would be our brother. I come from a place where, and I, when I branched out on my own, I went into the fairy tradition, which is a branch of Wicca. So yeah, you could say I was Wiccan. And so, in that faith, there is, we believe that we can take on the body and characteristics of a goddess or god. In the fair tradition, that would be the Great Mother or Danny Glass. In the Bible, Jesus speaks, and I'm bad at quoting scriptures. Please forgive me. You guys can look this up, Google it, go to your Bibles, whatever. It's there. But Jesus says, I and my Father are one. Thank you, God. I and my Father are one. So that's saying the same thing. That's saying the same thing. It also says that we were created in God's image. Same thing. So Christian witches have a lot of clout. They have a lot of real legit verifiable basis. Verifiable in witchcraft, verifiable in the Bible. But we know there's a lot of political stuff going on in the Bible, but the parts that you can pick out that are real substantial, have, they can validate all of that. And I don't refute when it's validated. So, I love Christian witches because they see this. And because they see that there doesn't have to be a separation. Now, one thing they do is, like Christians, they are antagonistic to other forms of witchcraft that honor or recognize goddesses, that recognize gods, like many polytheistic and, well, Christianity is polytheistic. If you think about it, threefold God. Wicca has the mother maiden crone. And it has Diana Glass. It's both. Well, the fair tradition also has Diana Glass. But mainly Wicca is a feminine religion. Feminine-based religion. Feminine-focused. It's for males and females and anything in between or outside of that. But it's basically on the focuses on the goddess. And it was created by a man. Go figure. So yeah, they have a very special place in my heart because I also have that in me also, Christian witches. I mean, there is a lot that goes on. I was raised in a... My grandmother's a coven witch. My grandfather went to church every Sunday, devout. My mom became a minister. She didn't stay long, but she became a minister. So there's a lot, and it's been quite proven to me beyond a shadow of a doubt. Beyond a shadow of a doubt. I cannot refute this. That God is real. The God that Christians and Christian witches believe in is real, but he's not the evil, sadistic God that he can be portrayed as, especially in the Old Testament. So, I mean, those types of gods are like the Greek gods, that whole pantheon of Greek gods that just have human failures and they get killed and die. Well, Christian God cannot get killed or die, because it's the Creator's creation. There's no other God beside Him nor before Him. So He can't get killed. So, yeah, so, and I lost my train of thought. So to say that, I was going towards that because he's not infallible. He does not, he's exact, doesn't make mistakes. He cannot be killed. He doesn't make human mistakes. It's wrong to try and humanize him by saying, by giving him the persona of a God that loses control of his temper and makes mistakes and misjudges, and especially when you look at the tiniest, most intricate creatures and how they're perfectly made, born, live, die. That's not explained by the Greek gods who war and fight, but it's spoken of pretty much referenced in the Bible. It's not even so intricately referenced in witchcraft either, I don't believe, but it's recognized as being the universe's beautiful mysteries and how it was created, how the universe loved its art so much that it created it. The gods and goddesses, how they must have loved us, loved their art or creativity, creation so much that they created those. Like toys, like playful, what can they create now? What can they put together and create here? It's like how it was, how it seems like it was. So yeah, I give Christian witches a lot of respect, because I have to give myself some, because I cannot deny the existence of God. And I won't deny it, ever. So, that is the, that will wrap up this podcast. And one day on another podcast, I will explain to you what happened, that when I was a child, that I cannot deny the existence of God. There's no way. And it was a couple things that happened, a few things that happened, a lot of things that happened, but a few that always stand out, always. And even one about 9 years ago, maybe 8 or 9 years ago, very interesting, very deep, very poignant things that happen, that directly happen from God. So that, I will save that for another podcast, because I am about the at the end of this one. Thank you all for listening in and for being interested in what I talk about. And all you hereditaries out there, thank you for coming, my sisters and my brothers. And for all you witches out there, whether you're hereditary or not, thank you. And it's late here, or early here. It's 2:28 in the morning here. So I wish you all a good night or a good morning. And till next time. Bye.